Neighborhood Voice explores community issues through the lens of local residents. We've spent time talking with entrepreneurs about their experiences running small businesses and how they've adapted during the pandemic. Now we're getting local perspectives on the impact of COVID-19 from organizations working most closely with the community. I'm your host, Erica Pfizer, and this week I'm joined by Jessica Patalis, Director of the Humane Indiana Shelter. Thank you for joining me, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
So I think most people are familiar with the adoption side of the shelter. Can you talk about some of the other services that the shelter offers people may be less aware of?
Yeah, so we have a whole outreach team dedicated to helping people. Adoptions are really just a sliver of what we do with the shelter. We have a community cat program where we spay and neuter outdoor cats and put them back where they came from. We do it for even socialized cats because we have found over studies done with the Humane Society of the United States that even friendly outdoor cats half the time are somebody's pet, and somebody with good intentions, just not knowing, has kind of kidnapped their animal. So we offer spay neuter for those animals. And then another huge thing that we do that our intake team covers is our diversion program, which we're really proud of. Our diversion program allows us to help pet owners who are looking to surrender because they can't care for their animals anymore. Sometimes it's because they have financial constraints. So for us, that looks like giving them food, supplies like leashes or collars, sometimes vet care, really anything, behavior advice over the phone. So that way we can enable them to keep their animal and we don't have to admit them to the shelter. And then another thing that we offer is our crisis foster program. And that's designed for people that are going through trauma, that typically they don't have a choice but to surrender because they have to be separated from their animal for a shortened period of time. Mm-hmm. And we decided we didn't want to have to take people away from their pets. So what we do is we offer a short-term foster placement. So people that are fleeing domestic abuse, that have to go to a shelter that doesn't allow animals, people whose houses have caught on fire. We've had people who are in hospital stays for a lengthy period of time with nobody to care for their pet. We've had all different kinds of situations. They go into our crisis foster program, and then they go back home once the owner's back on their feet.
And I think many people don't think about the kind of added trauma someone who's either fleeing domestic violence or maybe is homeless temporarily, that it adds to have to give up your pet. And so that's such a wonderful program that you have, that you would keep them temporarily so that they can reunite with them when they're in a better situation. And how long have you been doing this work? What brought you to humane or animal care work?
I have been in animal welfare for almost 10 years. I started out at the shelter just kind of wanting to wade my way in and see what I would, which route I wanted to go with in animal welfare, because I originally thought I wanted to go work for a zoo. But I absolutely fell in love with it because of the outreach programs. Sheltering now is just far beyond the traditional taking a bunch of animals in and adopting them out. All the other outreach programs are near and dear to me.
And not only do you receive animals that are surrendered by family, but you also work with other animal agencies, governmental agencies. Can you talk about some of those partnerships?
Yeah, so we have partnerships local and across the country. We work with a lot of our local animal controls. We have official community cat partnerships in place with Highland and Schererville Animal Control. We work a lot with Gary Animal Control. They're like our buddy, our sister organization, I guess. We work a lot with East Chicago as well. So sometimes when we're trying to pilot programs with animal control that's more outreach geared, we'll kind of use Gary as our pilot to see how it goes, and they're always willing to let us just experiment things. So Gary is always a go-to for us. We absolutely adore them. And then we're also part of the ASPCA network system. So shelters in the southern part of the U.S., usually our partner shelters are in Georgia or Texas or Louisiana. Their intake is more than quadruple what ours is. And as a result, they have to euthanize a lot for space. So even like puppies, little things, they just have to do it because there's nowhere to put them. So they partner with us and we take those animals that we know we can adopt really fast so that they don't have to be euthanized.
And the adoption process, it is more intense than, I don't know, than it used to be. I feel like you used to be able to go into shelters and they would let you play with the pup, but really not anymore. There's a lot of forms and kind of a matching process. Can you talk more about
adoption? So for us, we don't do that. We have found that it detours people. And we don't want to create barriers to adoptions. So our adoption process is actually super easy. It is more. You just kind of go in and visit, fill out a one-page short questionnaire. You sit down, talk to the adoption counselor either same day or whenever you can. And that's really just to get an idea of what your experience level is with pet ownership so that we can help fill in the gaps where you might need help or some advice. And then you take the pet home. We do offer same-day adoptions. We're very easygoing about it because we, one, believe that if somebody really wants an animal, they're going to get one no matter what. So we would rather that they get it from us and that they've got us to guide them the way, through the way if they're unsure. Also, we believe that most people that come to a shelter really are coming to do the right thing. They want to save an animal. It's a myth that people, you know, come to shelters to get animals to abuse them. That's not true. I've also been an animal control officer before, and I can say that people that are getting those animals, they're not going to shelters to get them. They are more likely to get them, like, off a Craigslist or something. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go out of their way to go through an adoption process to an abusive pet. So we're not really concerned there. The other thing that we have found is if we've made our adoption process too restrictive, if the pet owner is having a hard time, they're not going to want to come back to us and say, hey, I'm having a hard time, I need some help, because we've already been judgmental towards them. Sure. So if we're keeping an open mind, they're much more likely to say at the beginning stages that they need help versus the end, when at that point they're probably too far gone, it's too late, and they're returning the animal to us now, and we could have fixed it in the beginning. So we try to keep everything as open as possible.
So did you see a lot of adoptions over this past year? I know that there was some national news about shelters being empty because people who were working from home were taking on, you know, more pet care than they maybe could have if they were working out of the home. Did you see that in your shelter as well?
Yes, we did. It was actually amazing. We emptied our shelter so quickly. We had to close temporarily for COVID at the very beginning. I think we're on like a 6-week quarantine, the whole staff. And then as we started coming back, of course, we had different groups of people out on COVID quarantine. I feel like alternating constantly. So we kept a low population. We kept trying to empty the shelter out when it would happen, and people would come through and adopt, all of them. It was insane. I've never seen adoptions happen that quickly, that amount of animals, and they all stuck, which is even better. So yeah. We saw a huge, huge, huge rush to adopt and to foster, and that was really amazing.
And I'm glad to hear that they stuck. You would hate to think of someone adopted a pet and then went back to work and just found that they couldn't care for it the way that they thought they could.
Yeah, we've been seeing that there's kind of like a narrative nationally going on that a lot of shelters are getting all these returns from COVID-19 mm-hmm. adoptions. And that's really not true. A lot of the COVID adoptions have stuck. They're doing great at home. We are seeing an influx of owner surrenders, but they're not from that time frames of adoption. It's now what we're seeing is people are coming in and they're having trouble because they're just having financial issues because of COVID. And some of them have been at home for years, or they've never even been through our shelter system before. So we are seeing an uptick in requests for help or requests for space in the building, but it's not from any of those adoptions, luckily.
So other than cats and dogs, which we're most familiar with, what kind of other animals do you take into the shelter?
So the shelter specifically only takes in dogs and cats. Occasionally, we will get strange things kind of dumped off there. I've seen chickens, rabbits, guinea pigs, ferrets, pigs. I've seen snakes before. I would try not to deal with that stuff because we don't have the like equipment or food to feed them. So we have to scramble when it happens. But the shelter is exclusively dogs and cats. We do have a wildlife center in Valparaiso where our wildlife team takes in orphaned and injured native wildlife and rehabilitates them and releases them. They are awesome, and they take in all kinds of native wildlife. Our director there, Nicole Harmon, she is awesome. They have their own Facebook page, too, that people can follow so they can kind of keep up with what they're doing.
And what was that? What is the Facebook page?
The Wildlife Center's Facebook page is Humane Indiana Wildlife.
Okay. And so other than adoption, and what other ways can people support animals at Humane?
Aside from adoption, fostering is a huge need. We need fosters so bad. We really can't run a lot of the programs that we do without fosters. Like Crisis Foster, is that whole program is based on foster homes. So we can help more people. We cannot accept requests for help if we don't have foster parents. So we need fosters so badly, and we need kitten fosters. We're still in kitten season. We're still getting babies in, and we're having a hard time placing them. They're too little to stay in the shelter. If not having pets is an option at all, then people can volunteer. They can donate. They can come to our events. And even following our Facebook page, just like sharing our posts, is a huge help. Helps us get the word out when we do need help. So,
and if someone is hesitant about fostering, what are some of maybe the common barriers to someone fostering?
Yeah, so we've heard people say, well, for one, they don't have to, there's no cost to them. We cover everything. We provide all of the supplies. We provide the veterinary care. I've had people say they fostered for other organizations, and then after hours, they couldn't get a hold of somebody when there is a veterinary emergency. We have somebody on call that's able to answer the phone after hours and send them to an emergency vet if that happens. So that's not, again, a cost to the foster. We really try to make sure that foster pets are kept separately from owned pets, especially babies, just to make sure that nobody gets sick, everybody gets along. So usually our foster team, the ones that coordinate putting animals into foster care, they're really good about trying to help make sure that it's going to be right match for the family. They won't send home an animal that's going to be completely disruptive to somebody's life. They'll try to make it as easy as possible. So we'll take any kind of foster. Any foster helps, but we try to make it as easy as possible.
And so then they do get support throughout the foster. They get the supplies they need. They have access to staff members if there's an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds like you all put a lot of effort into making sure that the foster time is successful, and that the foster parents, I guess, feel supported throughout it.
Yeah, definitely. We rely on them. So anything they need.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about Humane? Any events you have coming up?
Yeah, we have really two of our really cool events coming up. October 23rd is our Festival of Owls event, and that is at the Porter County Expo Center. And then November 6th is our annual gala, and that's always a lot of fun. So there might be some puppies there. I don't know. That's a spoiler.
Well, puppies and a good dinner always draws people in. So, and could you give us the website? I know you provided the Facebook page for the Wildlife
The website Center. Is www.humaneindiana.org. And tickets to the events can also be purchased on that site.
Thank you so much, Jessica, for being here and sharing about Humane and the shelter and the way that it was impacted by COVID, because I think a lot of people aren't thinking about how animals have been impacted.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us this week on Neighborhood Voice. You can visit ourshot219.com for information about local COVID-19 resources in Northwest Indiana. This show is made possible by Legacy Foundation, the Community Foundation for Lake County, Indiana.